Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, as always. And guys, another draft in the books. The Packers have finished up the 2022 NFL draft and come away with 11 players, which is how many picks they went into. Of course, some trades were made, some deals were done, some hands shaked, as Spoon said the other day with the Vikings deal. But the Packers still come away with 11 players and a defense that is stacked, it seems like. Before we kind of get into the draft class overall, though, guys, I wanted to look at day three specifically, since we have not yet looked at that on our Green 19 podcast. And I know four picks in the seventh round, two in the fifth, none in the sixth. Ryan, I'll start with you. Kind of just assess the Packers day three and what they came away with, including two more receivers.
Yeah, I mean, what I say, they needed two receivers by the end of Friday, and they just barely missed it. But they went up and they got their first pick on day three. They went receiver with Romeo Dubs, and he's a guy that's got some punt return history. And I think that there was a theme, you know, that to me, getting the receiver early day three is notable. It's also notable that they had four seventh round picks. I mean, they really backloaded the end of this draft. The fourth seventh round pick coming by trading eight spots back to the end of the fifth round with the Denver Broncos and getting an extra seventh out of it. That's special teams land, you know. And Brian Gutekunst said that Tariq Carpenter, the safety out of Georgia Tech in the seventh round, is a guy that he's 6'3", runs well, a big, quick safety, type of guy that can cover, a type of guy that can translate to special teams. So, you know, I think that, you know, it was interesting to hear Brian Gutekunst after the draft say that a myth that what they've done in the past hasn't worked on special teams. They need to be open to doing things differently. I think they drafted special teams more than they have in the past.
Boone, in the seventh round specifically, yes, they hit a lot of special teams needs, but also guys like Rashid Walker, Samori Toure sort of fell to the seventh round, I guess you could say, considering the grades they had going in. Does it feel like the Packers were a little sneaky and got some guys that could potentially be playmakers beyond just special teams in the seventh round?
Well, what they did was take some chances on guys who look like NFL players but haven't necessarily played like NFL players. So they're banking on really their physical ability and hoping that it translates, because not all of them were productive or, you know, have classic speed or have, you know, just the exact size. They have something that makes them attractive. But, you know, a guy like Rashid Walker, you know, he got knocked a lot because a lot of folks didn't think he was really intense and, you know, he was kind of sloppy and, but he has all the measurables of a starting left tackle in the NFL. So the Packers are banking on, you know, their coaches being able to fix these guys. But it's not gonna happen with all of them. It's just, okay, you know, we think this is how they feel. They're like, we think we can, we have a shot at turning these around. I mean, like 15% of seventh rounders make it in the NFL, or 15, 20, something like that. So they're just trying to identify guys they think can make it. And, you know, they'll see what happens.
I saw an interesting stats and info note yesterday. Did you know there are more undrafted free agents in the Hall of Fame than first overall picks? Which I guess technically makes sense, because undrafted free agents would outnumber first overall picks in sheer quantity, but yes, you would think the quality would balance it out. But no, I thought that was an interesting note. That being said, there were also a slew of undrafted free agents signed yesterday. Spoon, Ryan, I know both of you were on phones and gathering those names. Were there any names that stuck out to you as kind of like, oh, wow, I'm surprised this guy fell out of the draft and had to get signed?
I didn't think it was real impressive. I wasn't like knocked over by any of them. Like, oh, man, that guy was unexpected. I think the Packers had so many draft picks that a lot of teams, or I'm sorry, a lot of agents probably said, you know, let's not go to Green Bay because they got too much talent and they have too many draft picks. So I wasn't real impressed by who they brought in. There wasn't any guys who are just off the charts physically or anything like that. They basically continued to add some offensive linemen. I think that was a big theme for this entire draft. I do kind of think the one guy from Indiana, the Caleb Jones, he's like 6'9 and 370 pounds. I mean, just enormous. I mean, it's unlikely he's going to make it, but I just want to see the dude. That was probably the most interesting guy.
Yeah, it's interesting to say. I kind of got the same impression that, you know, it didn't, there were no wow moments, but I'll be honest, the wow moment for me, it seems like every camp, and you know how the Packers are with undrafted free agents cracking the initial 53, every camp there's like, oh, hey, that guy, like that guy kind of flashes early in camp and makes some plays and then gets on your radar. So it's for, at least for me, it's pretty uncommon for me to be immediately after the draft and think, oh, this is an impressive guy. It's usually they get here and you see him on the field.
But Ryan, with something Spoon said about that one undrafted free agent, how big he was, that almost seemed to be a theme in this Packers draft in the first 2 days, but then also with the bulk they added on day three. And like you said, seventh round, they didn't have a pick in the sixth round, even fifth round, that can be special teams land. They bulked up their special teams is what it feels like. And it seems like that's something they realized they needed to do after the way San Francisco sort of pushed them around on special teams. Do you feel like that was intentionally done is essentially what I'm asking.
Are you saying that maybe having a 6'5", 340 pound defensive tackle in the middle of the punt protection unit would have been
some, okay, just then? Someone, my kingdom for someone to block Jordan Willis, you know?
Yeah. It might have been useful. I think they intentionally drafted special teams. I did get that impression. I think that there was a bent towards special teams. I know Quay Walker is not drafted to play special teams at 22 overall, but one of the first things you look up about this guy is that he was the special teams newcomer of the year for Georgia as a freshman. I mean, he's a 3-year backup and played a lot of special teams. He's got that pedigree. Christian Watson, he's not drafted to be a return specialist at 34. You don't trade 2 second-round picks, jump up 19 spots because you think that the guy might be a really good return. He's drafted to play receiver, but he might be a return. I don't know that he's going to get that opportunity. I think more of a Romeo Dubs in the fourth round is more likely to get the return opportunity because they need Christian Washington to be a receiver. But I mean, you know, your second round pick, he's got return background, special teams background. And then obviously the 4th, 7th rounders, day three. I think you saw, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the South Carolina edge rusher's name. Kingsley
Ugbare.
Say that again.
Ugbare.
Okay. That one, him. Yes. I'm still not going to try to pronounce it. Yeah. Well, so Kingsley's his given name, and that's how he was listed on TV. And then, you know, Kingsley Kiki comes to mind, right? But no, he's JJ. Yeah, Ryan Gutekunst said he's another guy. You know, he was a really solid player. He was an all SEC player in 2020. Did not make the list last year, but he was a productive guy at South Carolina in the SEC. He ran a 4.87. Drops to the 5th round, the last pick of the 5th round. He's another guy that Brian Gutekunst mentioned as far as having some potential for special teams.
Let's talk about another guy in the 7th round specifically. Tom, I know you referenced him falling, but Rashid Walker, is that just a camp body, a special teams body, or is he someone that could also push for playing time in what has suddenly become a very deep offensive line unit?
I don't know. He's probably a developmental guy, but, you know, he's got all the measurables, definitely has the talent to play in the NFL, but there's a lot of, you know, they're going to have to find out whether he's got what it takes to play internally in the NFL. And that's really all it comes down to. I don't think they expect him to come in and start. I don't, you know, he's a 7th round pick.
Right.
And so he's a guy that they'll add to the mix with all the others, and you never know what happens. I mean, some of these guys pan out. You know, Mark Tauscher was a seventh rounder. Adam Timmerman was a seventh rounder or sixth rounder. You know, Yash Nyman was undrafted. You don't know till you get them, but the one thing you got to do is, you know, draft guys that look like NFL players. And that's what they did.
Yeah. I mean, Rashid was a potential first round pick if he had come out early last year, elected to go back to Penn State, had a little bit of an off year, but still was coming into Friday as a potential projected third round pick. So to fall to the seventh round, like you said earlier, I'm curious to see him in person. I'm curious to see what he does when, you know, he has to possibly go against Kenny Clark in practice and, you know, things like that.
The thing about these rankings that people, you know, they come from draft nicks who have gotten pretty good at judging guys on talent, but the scouts go in and find out what these guys are like, what they're made of. They talk to people, they interview the kid, they talk to
the equipment manager. They ask how many teammates were at your birthday party.
They interview the equipment manager. They you know, talk to their parents. It's really, they know more about these players than any draft nick ever would. And they take into account all those things. And a Rashid Walker dropped because a lot of guys just didn't think he was their type of guy. And so, you know, even though he has that talent, that doesn't necessarily make him an NFL prospect. So he's got a lot of stuff to show, and so do other guys. It's really, you know, you can say a guy was a third round pick, or, you know, was supposed to be a third round pick, but in the eyes of the scouts, unless he was picked in the third round, he really wasn't. That's our limitation as people who don't regularly evaluate talent.
Can we just put it this way? If the guy fell to the seventh round, there's a reason for that. And he's got something to make up for. And he either will or he won't. But there's no question that the guy was picked in the seventh round for a reason.
Right. Right. It wasn't like, oh, man, everybody forgot about him. You know, like, oh, shoot, we forgot about Rashid Walker.
No, that's
where who took his magnet off the board?
Yeah, right. His magnet fell off and
stuck behind the board and between the wall. Oh gosh, that's funny. I know we talked about this. I'm assuming y'all have seen Draft Day with Kevin Costner and understood my joke.
It's been years. I saw it once, and then I realized that I like Kevin Costner in baseball movies much more than football movies. I didn't watch it.
I watch it every year before the draft, and that's like why. That's what caused the number one overall pick to drop, was the Brown scouts questioned why none of his teammates were at his, he was actually the Wisconsin quarterback in the movie. And the scouts questioned why none of his teammates were at his 21st birthday party. And
see, there you go.
Bad teammate. Yeah. Anyways. Okay. Let's move on. Let's look at this draft overall. Guys, I'm going to start with this. And I hesitate to even ask this because I asked it last night and Ryan slightly yelled at me, but I'm going to ask it anyways.
Did I yell? I was tired last night. I might have yelled.
You raised your voice in a upset manner.
I think that was tired talking.
Let's just start with this and use it as a kicking off point. What grade would you give overall to this Packers draft class?
I did yell. That's right.
Spoon, you can go ahead and start while Ryan simmers down his blood pressure before answering this question.
Okay. I give them somewhere from an A to an F. That's where
I'm good. Thank you.
That's so cheating.
That was a much nicer way than what I put it, which is I don't give grades after drafts.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's an easy jumping off point to say, here's how I think this draft went overall for this team.
Okay, here's how I think it went overall. They took 11 picks. They got some guys. Well, come back to me in 3 years and I'll tell you how it went.
I'm done with y'all.
For me,
you're useless to me.
All you can ever want from a draft in the immediate aftermath of a draft to me is whether or not you can see a plan executed. Like, was there a plan here? Did they actually can you see what they're trying to do? And I do think that you can see the plan in this draft. I mean, Jerry Montgomery a month ago said that they had room for another twitchy interior pass rusher, and they go and they get Devontae Wyatt, who runs a 4.77 at 304 pounds. Can he play? I have no idea if Devontae Wyatt can play. We'll find that out over the next couple of years. But that's a plan. Quay Walker, pairing him with Devondre Campbell, that fundamentally changes the nature of this defense. No longer having to drop safeties into the box and make them hybrid linebackers. You're sturdier against the run without sacrificing coverage on the second level. That's a plan. Can Quay Walker play? I have no idea. I have no idea if Quay Walker can play. Christian Watson, that was a plan. After not getting a receiver, missing out on the receiver run, six receivers in the first 18 picks, Brian Gutekunst didn't freak out and panic. He stuck to his board, took defense. Second day, he went up and got a receiver. Christian Watson, can he play? I have no idea, but you can see the plan there. So, yeah, look, they hit. They wanted to get more receivers, more offensive linemen. They hit three at each position. Can any of these guys play? We don't know, but there was a plan in place, and I guess for now, that's really all you can ask.
That's a very fair point, and it brings up something I wanted to ask about. So, Spoon, I'll jump to you for this. Was, again, to just kind of backpack off what Ryan said, what does this do for their defense, specifically adding Wyatt and Walker? And does adding someone like Tariq Carpenter later on day three, does it seem like they're still going to stick to what they've done well in the past because he is a safety that can drop down into the box, or is he more special teams? How much – this defense ended 2021 season on a pretty high note. How much better can it be if they are able to get production out of Wyatt and Walker in their rookie seasons?
Yeah, that'll be something to definitely follow. I wanted to kind of piggyback on what Ryan was saying about the strategy of the draft. And I guess what seems smart to me was, so, you know, they went in here, they knew they needed wide receiver help. They had the option, you know, presumably of chasing one of the top wide receivers, you know, someone who could possibly help them, not probably, but possibly help them right away. You know, if they got a Garrett Wilson, maybe they had sold out and moved up and gotten him, maybe that would have helped their receiver room immensely. But they decided not to do that, or they couldn't do it. And so what they did, in my opinion, was, you know, they built strength in different areas, went after strengthening key areas. They went after the middle of their defense. They went after the offensive line. You know, all areas where if you improve, you improve your whole team when you're better in those areas. So, you know, instead of they didn't go wild with wide receivers. You know, they took Watson. That was, you know, that was probably what they should have done. And then they added some other long shot guys, but they really tacked on to some of the strengths and built the interior of their roster, I think, with their picks. And that was the alternative, you know, to selling out with going up to get a Wilson or something like that.
You asked Matt LaFleur yesterday, is this team going to be stronger? If this team is stronger on defense than it is on offense, essentially, can you live with that? Of course, he gave the coach's answer. I don't care what the score is as long as we win. You know, what's the old coaches? I don't care if it's 50-51 or 3-2. I've seen a 3-2 football game, by the way, Auburn, Mississippi State.
That's right, you have.
I don't care what the score is. Will Muschamp told me once that his ideal game would be a 2-0 win because the only point scored would have been a safety. All of that to say.
That's why Will Muschamp's no longer a head coach in college football.
But he's a pretty dang good defensive mind. Exactly. All of that to say, do you believe Matt LaFleur when he says that? Of course, that's what he has to say. But how do you think he might actually handle, and I know this is looking really far ahead, but how do you think he might actually handle games in October or November where Aaron Rodgers is getting frustrated that rookies aren't, or that wide receivers aren't running the right routes, and he is having to rely on his defense? How do you think he'll handle that?
You want me to go first?
Sure. I was just saying, I had an idea first.
You asked the question, Spoon. It was your question. I thought it was a really good answer you gave you too.
Yeah, it was a good answer to some degree. The problem for LaFleur is, I think he would say, absolutely, I'll absolutely do that. But he has Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. And it's good. I think it's going to be, the reason I asked it too, is I think it's going to be a tug of war. Because let's say their defense is good and Bisaccia's cleans up their special teams. You know, part of winning Super Bowls is having a defense. I mean, look at what the Rams did and look at what the Buccaneers did the year before that. They had Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford, but those guys did not, you know, they were okay with playing the defensive style of, you know, let's keep the score down. If we have to play field position football, if we have to run the ball, we will. And then when we have the opportunity to throw it around the yard, we will. But defense was what won them those championships. And, you know, I just think, I don't know if they can do that with Rodgers. I think as long as Rodgers is there, the emphasis is going to be on offense. So that's going to be an interesting deal come next season.
Ryan, do you agree?
Yeah, I think Spoon makes a really good point that it's more about how the quarterback's going to handle it than Matt LaFleur. I think Matt LaFleur has the one loss record next to his name. As long as it's a W, not an L, he's breathing okay. It's a lot harder, I think, for a certain quarterback who's always used to doing things a certain way to maybe, you know, it's going to be interesting to buy in to what seems to be a real possibility that this team's going to be built different on the defense, improve special teams, and even offensively, an offense that's going to be built different with ground and pound. You know, part of the answer that Matt LaFleur gave that really stuck out to me is that offensively he's been with the Derrick Henry, where the best way to go was to run the ball 40 times. He said he was very careful to say, I don't think we have to do that here because we have a certain quarterback, right? But he's done that before. I think, you know, Matt LaFleur's base offense is a run outside zone run scheme and a passing game built off the action fake. Like that's what he likes to do. That's his scheme. So I don't think that, you know, the fact that this is going to probably be a run oriented offense, I don't think that bothers Matt LaFleur at all. I think it'll be very interesting to see how the quarterback handles that.
Yeah. And you know what, is sort of a factor there is how you have to show Rodgers that, look, we put up incredible numbers during the season. We were great offense. And then we got to the playoffs, and when we stalled, you know, if we would have played to our defense's strengths, we would have been in the NFC champ or would have been in the Super Bowl. But they had those series where he just insisted on throwing, and they had the three and outs, and they couldn't run out the clock, and it just, they lost again. You know, same thing with the Brady NFC Championship game. They got to figure out. He has to figure out that if he wants to win a Super Bowl, it doesn't have to be all about him. You know, he doesn't have to carry the team on his shoulders. He's going to have to start relying on the defense.
And I want to make clear that I'm not saying that Aaron Rodgers won't buy in. I'm pretty confident Aaron Rodgers wants to win a Super Bowl. He's got the new contract. He's got the money now. I think it's important to Aaron Rodgers to go and win a Super Bowl. But I do think it's going to be interesting because what do we know about Aaron Rodgers? He's got a lot of confidence in himself, right? I mean, he thinks that right arm is in, for good reason. For a long time, that right arm has been why this team has won and been a perennial Super Bowl contender. He's got a lot of confidence in himself. To buy in is going to be interesting to see how he handles it. I'm not saying that he's not going to buy in, but I do think
I am.
I think it's just going to be interesting. I'm not going to go there. Okay. But I think it's interesting.
I'm saying he can't. He's just, it's not possible.
He can't help himself from playing hero ball.
No, he just, it's who he is, and it's what his, what he's been, you know, all through his career. And, you know, it's, the result is the Packers are a really good team every single year, and they're in the playoffs. But at some point, you have to ask yourself, you know, when or what's it going to take to win it all? And, you know, part of it is that he won it all being this, you know, phenomenal guy who carried them through the playoffs. I mean, they were a good team. They had a really good defense, but he just got ultra hot, you know, during the playoffs, and they went to the Super Bowl. But that hasn't happened again. And so, you know, maybe someone has to get to him and say, look, you can't rely on that happening every year.
Can I ask you a question? Because
it's just funny that as we're talking about this, I'm watching Giannis like go off in this game.
Because you were actually covering the league when this happened, but this sounds a lot like the transformation that John Elway had to make in the back of his career, right? I mean, when he finally won Super Bowls, it was not all because of him, like it was earlier in his career. When he got the Super Bowls in Denver, I mean, it was because he was a generational talent, and he was John Elway. When the Broncos finally cracked through that ceiling, it was because they had the roster around him to do so. Was that hard for John Elway? I mean, how did he? Because that's to me, that's the same type of transformation now that Aaron Rodgers has to make.
No, I think he had to do that, and I think Mike Shanahan had to convince him of it. I don't remember. I'd really have to go back and see. Now, Elway's skills were probably deteriorated more than Rodgers have at that point. But, you know, that's a really excellent point, because he basically turned that team over to Terrell Davis in the offensive line. You know, that's what beat the Packers in the Super Bowl. Not John Elway. He had the one run that was really key, but everything else was Terrell Davis and that offensive line. So, yeah, that's a great analogy.
Good job, Brian. You know,
blind squirrel finds a nut.
Okay, guys, the rookies will be in Green Bay Thursday evening. They take to the practice field on Friday. They will practice Friday and Saturday. Y'all have both been doing this a long time. What do you like to see out of a rookie class in that first weekend, that rookie mini camp? I know it's basically just like, you know, getting them into the room and going over the syllabus essentially, but is there anything that you can garner about a guy, about a rookie class, about a vibe, as cliche as it sounds to ask that, in that rookie mini camp weekend? Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah. I'll go first. I think Spoon probably, gleans even more than I do, but for me, it's just the eye test. Seeing these guys in person, how are they built? What do they look like on a field? I'll never forget when I saw AJ Dillon's quads for the first time. Like the just, you know, he hadn't even carried the ball yet, but he's just running out there in shorts, and I'm like, my God, those quads! You know, like it's just the eye test. It's just seeing these guys on a football field for the first time, and not just seeing the measurables on paper, but seeing how they're built, seeing what they look like on a field, that to me, the rookie orientation, that's the first impression for me.
And I think that'll make it, that's a very good point, because it'll make it interesting when we finally see Christian Watson in person, because Brian Gutekunst has done everything in his power to convince us that this is not MVS.
And bigger jointed. I want to see how Christian Watson is bigger. I want to see what bigger jointed means.
Yeah. What does that look like on a body? Yeah. Spoon, anything you look for?
No, Ryan hit it on the head. And I also like to hear the guys there and kind of, you know, see how they express themselves and what type of person they're going to be, you know, or how they present themselves. I'm always curious, because all you have is this piece of paper with their numbers on it and their stats and all of that. You really don't know who they are as a person. I'll tell you what was an example of the eye test was last year, I came out, might have been an OTA. I don't think I had really watched much of the rookie mini camp, or maybe I couldn't make it or something. And it was my first practice in OTAs, and I saw Amari Rodgers, and I was watching him. I just spent a little bit of time watching him, and my first impression was, man, this guy's slow. And, you know, he just looked like he was a half step behind everybody. And I was just really shocked at that. And, you know, so far that kind of has held true, that he just hasn't shown the explosiveness. I think you can glean some things. And I think these coaches do too. Once they get them pretty quick, they understand what they have. So yeah, that's the part I really look forward to.
Well, we will be there to see what they bring to the field, to let you know what a bigger jointed wide receiver looks like, if any quads jump out. This sounds so weird out of context. Like if somebody just heard us saying like, man, I can't wait to see that guy's quads. Like, yeah, let's see what he looks like when he's in a pair of shorts. I'm glad we have some context here.
I never knew that I ever wanted to see like what was intimidating seeing a guy's quads until I saw AJ Dillon's quads for the first time.
Godzilla.
That was a life moment. I'm like, I've never seen
quads. I'll never forget where I was the first time I saw AJ Dillon's quads.
By the way, I figured out what Gutekunst was saying in Big Jointed.
Okay, lay it on
us.
Please inform us.
I have a feeling that would have been sort of the thing I would say if I was forced to be up at a podium at the, you know, after the end of three drafts. Like I could barely get out a question that made sense. And at the end of those press conferences, uh-huh. I mean, I felt like I was in a freaking fog.
Because I called Jaire Alexander a slot receiver, did Brian Gutekunst. So
I know. And it's so I'm cutting him some slack on that. I think he was saying big framed. You know,
that makes so much more sense.
Frame, you know, to carry on. But I'm totally not going to whack him for that because,
oh gosh, no.
I like asked a question yesterday and I'm not sure he even knew one word of what I said, you know, because I was just like, blah, 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 blah.
Well, after I called Jaire Alexander a slot receiver and Brian Gutekunst looked at me like I was drunk. I go, it's a long weekend. In my head, I'm like, wait, this is a much longer weekend for him than it is for me. But yeah, no, our brains are mush at the end of those 3 days.
Yeah.
That being said, everybody take a few days off, or at least, you know, an afternoon. You can go watch the rest of this Bucks game, which will be well over by the time this podcast comes out, and the Bucks will be up 1-0 in the series against Boston, which is huge, huge, man, to get a game in Boston under your belt. I know this is a football podcast. I'm just distracted because
if you're going to talk about that, I'm just going to sit here and keep talking about the Mets no-hitter.
So. Yeah, they're currently winning 94-78 with 6 minutes left.
The Mets are up 94-78.
That's impressive.
Holy moly.
They should come away from this game 1-0 in the series. By the time this podcast comes out, the Bucks should be 1-0 in this series. And then they'll have a game on Wednesday, and then they will be at home in Milwaukee on Saturday. So that should be a really, really exciting game on Saturday.
Is this the Bucks podcast?
I got distracted, okay? We cover all Wisconsin sports.
Yeah. I don't even know what the NBA is. It's baseball season.
Covering all Wisconsin.
Cassidy so doesn't understand the Green Bay Packers beat yet and Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, Aaron Rodgers is a minority owner in the Bucks. This is relevant, okay? No, relevant.
They don't care.
I'm covering Aaron Rodgers' investment.
Wake them up in the finals.
Exactly. Okay, all of that to say, rookies will be here this week. We will be there as well to let you know everything that happens. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage. Guys, would you like to use your final 30 seconds for anything? You notice I cut it down from 60 to 30.
Ryan, I'll let you go first.
I'll make this point. All right, since Spoon, you mentioned him. I think a big winner of this draft was Amari Rodgers. And I say that because if they had taken Treylon Burks and he was a popular name in the mocks, I think that would have been really bad for Amari Rodgers. Treylon Burks is the type of guy. I mean, he moves across the formation, a lot of creative ways to use him. What they wanted to do when they drafted Amari Rodgers in the third round last year. Now they don't have a slot receiver. I mean, these guys that they drafted are perimeter guys. There's an opening there at slot. I'm not saying that Amari Rodgers is going to walk through that door, but the door is open for Amari Rodgers. There's an opportunity there. And with how his rookie season went, I think that an opportunity there is about the best that he could have hoped for this spring. So I think Amari Rodgers was a big winner, even taking three receivers, a big winner of this draft.
Fair point. Spoon, would you like to rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm going to pontificate on Jordan Love.
Such a good word.
A lot of people had, you know, on the blog were asking if he was going to get traded and all this kind of stuff. And I think Brian Gutekunst kind of sent him a message this weekend, you know, by not denying or saying, no, that's not going to happen. You know, he kept saying, we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. I think they're sending Jordan Love a message that get your act together and start playing like a first round pick. You know, you're not guaranteed anything. And I think Jordan Love needs a kick in the pants. By now he should be playing better than he has been.
At least evolving.
I think he's got a lot of talent and we haven't seen it. And I think they're getting a little frustrated too. So whether it's a message or they're really considering dealing him, I don't know. But I just, every time he didn't answer that question, I just thought to myself, well, you know, most cases you had a first round pick, they'd say, no, we're just not dealing him, you know, forget it. And, you know, some team would have to, you'd send out the message to teams that, you know, you're going to have to give us a lot if we're going to give him up. And I didn't hear that from
Right.
So.
Cause you could argue that it was twofold, to send a message to Jordan Love and to tell teams the phone lines are open. But like you said, if you tell teams the phone lines are open, they're coming in low on their offer.
Exactly. Exactly. So I really don't know exactly, you know, I mean, I know that they were want him to be better. Mm-hmm. And, but I don't know what their feeling is about trading him. You know, mm-hmm. I just know that there seemed to be a little bit of a message there.
And, you know, if Aaron Rodgers is not going to be present at off-season workouts, they'll need Jordan Love. Somebody's got to throw the ball unless Matt LaFleur wants to get out there and do it.
Apparently he slid over there after the Bucks game for a couple of days.
Huh? Worked out for a little bit with the guys. Yeah.
One day.
One day.
One day? Because I got confused. I thought it was one day, and then I thought he said he was there for a few days.
I understood it as that next morning, and he stayed for that day.
Just that day?
Yes. Okay. I could have understood wrong, but that was the sense I got when Matt was talking about it. Matt LaFleur.
To your point, and this, if I can conjoin the 2 points that you guys made.
Sure, bring us home. Land this plane.
Isn't it interesting that message was sent to Jordan Love right before the keys to this offseason are handed to Jordan Love? Because this, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to be here 3 days, right? I mean, he's going to be here for the mandatory minicamp. That's it. Everything else in this offseason program is going to be Jordan Love. It's a huge offseason for him, and it is time for him to put it together this offseason. So that message was sent. If it was a message, it was very ideally placed.
It was timely. Right as it went. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, the other thing, if I can string this out a little bit longer, is that, you know, the whole Jordan Love thing will go all through training camp and, you know, all through the offseason and training camp, because, you know, what if Seattle finds out that Drew Lock, which they are going to find out, can't play? And, they're sitting there getting ready to go into season with nothing. And, you know, they decide maybe Jordan Love has a couple of good preseason games. Maybe they decide to offer something. I don't know. You know, maybe they decide to offer over DK Metcalf. And I shouldn't even say that.
You just kicked up the hornet's nest. You walked out into the field and you saw it and you kicked it.
You know what? Cut that out. I that's from fatigue. That's totally a fatigue statement there. Forget I ever said that. But anyway, not the part about the trade. You know, something like that could happen.
Well, they need to. Yeah, that's why I didn't see him getting traded right now, because they'd be trading low. They need to rebuild his trade value, right. And that can happen the preseason. I mean, the preseason, right. Where that happen. So yeah, I mean that's a good point. I mean they've got to rebuild something there.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, again, whatever happens, we will have it covered for you. So make sure you stick to PackersNews.com as we continue to put the final bow on the 2022 NFL draft and then prepare for rookie minicamp. Guys, thanks so much for your time. As always, this has been the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.